Europe.
Charlemagne. From Macron to Macroff. Europe faces a new age of shrunken French influence.
In 1965, an imperious president of France all but derailed the European project by means of an empty chair, vetoing any schemes cooked up in Brussels by simply refusing to send French officials to any meetings there. In 2024, a no less imperious French president is hoping to go one better, to fill France's chair in European Union meetings with ministers who'll either be powerless to act or decry the EU as a globalist plot. Back then, Charles de Gaulle relented after 6 months, once he was satisfied that lesser Europeans wouldn't be able to impose their will on the French. Alas, the forthcoming crisis induced by Emmanuel Macron's decision to call, and then get trounced in, snap elections, is likely to last far longer. Talk of Frexit, now or later, is overdone. But the effect of the sitting president losing his authority in Europe, call it Macroff, is still a blow for the Union. France, for years a driving force in the EU, is likely to become a handbrake. The shape of France's future relationship with the Union will depend on the second round of voting in legislative elections on July 7th. The biggest fear in Brussels and just about every EU capital bar Budapest is that the National Rally, or RN, of Marine Le Pen will win a majority after coming top in the first round. Its flagship policy until 2017 was to leave the EU altogether. Until even more recently, it wanted to pull out of NATO's integrated military command structure, which de Gaulle huffed out of shortly after the empty chair spat. Nicolas Sarkozy, another imperious French president, attentive readers may be spotting a trend here, rejoined in 2009. If the RN is the biggest party but falls short of a majority, as seems likely, it may still be able to cobble together a national conservative coalition, oozing Euroscepticism. More likely, though, is a hung parliament, and even that will be troublesome. What would then ensue is perhaps not Macroff so much as Macron the Blink. Bar a resignation, the incumbent of the Élysée Palace will remain president until 2027. That will entitle him to keep attending meetings of EU leaders, in which the most important issues are discussed. But he will be in office rather than in power. Many decisions taken in Brussels, including the torrent of regulatory measures it produces, are voted on by government ministers, not national leaders. Without a viable coalition in Paris, will there even be ministers to send to EU confabs? Unlike oft-fragmented polities such as Italy and Belgium, France has no tradition of caretaker governments to keep affairs running while complex coalitions are cobbled together. Having technocrats run the show, as some politically stuck European countries do when gridlocked, would probably look like reheated Macronism to the RN. Assuming ministers can in time be rustled up, what this would mean for EU business is unclear. The club has nearly doubled in size since the last cohabitation started in 1997. The then president, Jacques Chirac, imperious rating high, grappled with an opposition prime minister with a similar outlook on Europe. Chirac went on to recover full powers after his party won legislative elections in 2002. Because of term limits, not to mention his deep personal unpopularity, Mr. Macron, in contrast, is riding into the political sunset. In Brussels, he will be an imperious lame duck. Does this matter? With 27 members in the EU, one is always having a political wobble. Several countries are already run by politicians of a similar hue to Ms. Le Pen, such as Italy and Hungary. On July 2nd, a Dutch prime minister backed by a hard-right party was sworn in. But the French presidents share a penchant for haughtiness for a reason. As a founding member of the club, one half of the Franco-German engine at its heart and the bloc's sole nuclear-armed power, France has outsize influence. Mr. Macron put Europe at the heart of his agenda. Two of his most notable speeches pondered the future of the EU. Big ideas, like the Union jointly borrowing hundreds of billions in a post-COVID recovery fund, were born in Paris. The notion of strategic autonomy, think of it as a plan for how Europe can cope with Trumpism rebooted, was Mr. Macron's, before it became widely adopted. Three concerns can be heard in EU circles. The first is about Ukraine. Mr. Macron had a slow start when it came to supporting it, initially talking of not humiliating Russia, then expressing scepticism about enlarging the EU all the way to Kyiv. But he has emerged as a strident supporter of Ukraine's cause, pushing the Union in a more hawkish direction. As president, Mr. Macron would keep some purview over foreign policy. But putting that policy into practice would be difficult, not least given the RN's admiration for Russia's president Vladimir Putin. French ministers could block Ukraine's accession to the club, as the RN advocates, or derail attempts to funnel more EU money to it. The second concern involves France's public finances. Its debt is high, at well over 100% of GDP. The European Commission has already ordered the French budget deficit at 5.5% in 2023, nearly twice the 3% EU limit, to be reined in. A new finance minister needing to heed RN preferences might take pride in defying Eurocrats' edicts. A rerun of the Greek debt crisis at French scale is not yet on the cards. But demagogues in high places might turn what could have been a manageable spat into something uglier. The biggest worry is that a diminished France will mean the end of the EU's recent age of ambition. In the past decade or so, the bloc has reacted to every crisis, and there have been many, from the Greek one to Brexit, the environment, COVID-19 and Ukraine, by doing more together. At the very least, that dynamic will not survive a French president hobbled at home. As 2027 nears, all eyes will be on Ms. Le Pen and whether her old Frexit plans will be dusted off if she wins. But even before then, with Mr. Macron on the ropes, the European project will have lost an imperious ally.